But actually, last month, I got to hear David speak at Social Media Breakfast, which was, how many people did they have? About 150 or so?
I think it's about 150.
Now. I think just about every one of them was in tears during the middle of David's story. So,
I bummed him out that bad.
It was terrible. No, but hopefully we can get a little bit of David's humor, and he can. I mean, he's a persuasive speaker. So.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate
it. Of course.
Thanks. Good morning.
That experience was really wild, and some of you can appreciate that. That even though I've been doing speaking for years and years, and most of the time, you know, I'm not nervous. I got an email at 6:20 in the morning from the organizer. Actually, she had sent it late that night, and I just checked before I left, asking if I'd be interested in speaking there, too. Oh, my God. And it's and since the topic was on storytelling, it was a perfect opportunity to use stories to teach the topic. And it was a great example of one of the nice things about using stories and communicating is it makes it easier for you. Not only does the audience enjoy it more, but it's sort of like hanging out with an old friend. Because how many of you have spoken in public? Okay. How many find that somewhat nerve-wracking? Yeah, absolutely. And if we speak and like, okay, what are like the three opening points that I need to make? That's really uncomfortable. But if you can start off with a story, especially if it's a story that you've experienced, it feels like an old friend because you lived through it. You don't have to memorize anything. So one of the ways, if you have an opportunity to present, one of the ways of communicating the value of your idea, your organization, your business, your offering, is to share a pain and promise story. And here's an example of that. Several years ago, I was speaking at an association event, and the vendor who was sponsoring the event got to spend about 5 minutes before I came on to talk about his business. And unfortunately, he could have used some speaking coaching because he was sort of like, how many of you remember that Far Side cartoon where it says what we say to dogs and what dogs hear? So what we say to dogs, like, get out of the garbage, Ginger. Don't ever do that again, Ginger, etc. That's what we say, and what they hear, all you see is blah, 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 Ginger, blah, 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 Ginger, blah, blah, blah. And the poor guy was sort of like that because he was just speaking in abstractions about the marketplace, throwing out some stats that basically the people in the audience already got. And they're like, yeah, we know that, we know that. If he had told a pain and promise story, so if he had told a story about people like the people in the audience who were dealing with the same kind of struggles the people in the audience were experiencing, their antenna would be up, like, tell me more. You get me? So that's an example. What I just shared with you is an example of a pain and promise story. Because most of you can relate to that speaking where you're like, you want to get your point across, you believe in it, but it's like, man, they're not getting it. You know, the audience isn't with me. Now, others of you can relate to this application of storytelling. Have you ever noticed that sometimes people don't take your great advice? Ever notice that? Have you also noticed that if you, let's say it's a prospect, a client, whomever, that they're not getting what you're trying to say, and maybe they're doing objections or rebuttals that you're like, no, dude, you're not getting it. But if you try to engage and struggle with them, then their defenses go up, and now we've got this uncomfortable, combative situation going on. Well, that's actually what inspired me to learn about storytelling. And this is what happened. In a previous career, as Jeff mentioned, I used and taught hypnosis and therapeutic storytelling, but it wasn't always that way. My first job out of grad school was as a substance abuse counselor. And because I was the new kid on the block in this agency, I got to work with the hardest, most undesirable clients, which were the people who were in the criminal justice system. And then Susan, she turned me down. No, I just think she turned me down for a job interview. So I'd forgotten about that. We met years later. She goes, "Remember?" Like, I'm sorry, but I turned you down for a job interview. I love that. Yeah. So here's the situation. So I saw people who could either go to jail or talk to me. So, you know, which would you choose? But just because they came to talk to me didn't mean they were interested in dealing with their substance abuse problem. And I had been trained in a very direct approach to addressing addiction, saying, you know, here's what I see. You know, you've had 3 OUIs, you've lost 6 wives, 7 jobs. Don't you think you have a substance abuse problem? And naive kid that I was, I thought they would thank me for saving their lives. Not only did they not thank me, but they never came back to see me for the second appointment.
They went to jail.
So I found this guy, a jail suddenly looking far more appealing. Exactly. And here's what I did. Think about how often you've done this. We've all done this. I blamed them for not getting my message. You know, in that field, it's like they're in denial. They're not able to hear that. How often do we blame the audience or the marketplace for not grasping the awesomeness of our message? And so I could either continue to feel good about it's all their fault and not mine, or I could start filling up my caseload. So I figured, I need to try a different approach. This approach, the very direct confrontational approach, isn't working. So I started hearing from colleagues about this approach called neuro-linguistic programming. There was like this magical overtones about NLP. So I ended up going to a conference in Florida, a 5-day conference that I thought was an NLP training. It wasn't. It was a training on hypnosis and therapeutic storytelling by the 2 foremost students of a man named Dr. Milton Erickson. And Erickson was a master at working with patients that nobody else could get through to. That traditional direct approaches to reaching them, all they got was defensiveness, resistance, etc. And what Erickson was a master at, besides hypnosis, was using stories to communicate. And he described it as a therapy of politeness, because instead of battering people with your opposing point of view, you share a story. And how many of you have dogs? Okay. And those of you who don't have dogs, you've seen a dog before. And if you've ever done this with dog medication, that you put the medicine in like a little blob of peanut butter, stories are like a blob of peanut butter. And what I found was when I came back with using story approaches, it totally transformed the response that I got from clients. So when you're in situations where you need to challenge, whether it's a prospect or a client or a family member, instead of doing a frontal assault by sharing a story, it's a gentle and fun way of getting the message across. It's also storytelling allows you to make your ideas more memorable, more punchy. Let me give you an example. And this is also an example of how stories are everywhere. One of the things I love the most in working with people is helping them recognize you already are a storyteller and you already have some awesome stories just ready to go. You just want to figure out how to use them with intention. And so here's an example of stories are everywhere. So before I became a substance abuse counselor and a therapist, I wanted to become a wildlife biologist. And I saw way too many National Geographic specials, those of you who ever saw those. And I thought that was like what wildlife biology was. So I went to graduate school at Orono. I grew up in Connecticut. Went to Orono for grad school to become a wildlife biologist. In my first semester, I realized, oh my God, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And I got really depressed. And it was sort of like, this is how pathetic my life was at the time. My highlight was getting up and listening to the morning talk show or morning DJs for the rock station there because they were really funny. And it just like downhill the rest of the day. So what I would do is every time I had a time free from school, I'd go back to Connecticut just to escape the horror show that was my grad program. And I would share with people about how much I didn't like my program. And there was this lady back in Connecticut that I had sort of like a teenage crush on. And even though I was, whatever, 22, still that sort of situation where you want to put your best foot forward, you really want them to think you're cool and like you. And you think about it, sometimes, even as adults, we're still in high school. Like, let's say you're at a networking event or a conference, and there's somebody who's higher stature in the field than you, and you're like, oh, you want to make sure you come across just right, and you know, what are they thinking about me, as opposed to just doing your, just being your own bad self. Okay, and so that's what's going on in my head. I want her to find me really fascinating and interesting. So as I'm telling her my tale of woe, I'm dialing up the drama a dial. So hopefully, again, she's like really captivated by my story. So I'm talking about going on the highs and lows. Every day is like highs and lows. I'm like on a roller coaster of emotions. And then I reach what I think is going to be the crescendo of like this story. And I say with like full on 20-something gusto, every day I run the whole gamut of emotions. And even though I'd never heard anybody pronounce that word before, it's like, man, that just doesn't sound right. Here's a little tip. Listen to how somebody else pronounces a word first. If you've only read it in a book, find out the pronunciation first. So, as that, like, gamut is, like, hanging in the air, I'm like, uh-oh. Well, soon as I leave here, I go home. I'm not making this up. I run to my dictionary. Look. Ah, damn it. Okay. So here's what happened. For the next year, and tell me if you've not done this, your own version of this. For the next year, two things are happening. One is, when I'm away from her, I'm playing my own little Stephen King horror film festival. You know, and so we take something that's a little deal and we make it into a big deal. And so I'm picturing the scenario over and over. It's kind of like, no, you know, like in the movies. And then I'm picturing her telling her friends and like, oh, this big dummy, blah, blah, blah. You know how we do that? So I'm embarrassing myself over and over about it. And then the other thing I'm doing is when I'm with her, instead of just enjoying the conversation, I'm finding a way to slip the word gamut into every conversation. And so finally, about a year this goes by, and I can't handle the tension anymore. I just got to be out with it. So the next time I see her, I say something like, I feel like such an idiot about, I still think about that time I said I ran the whole gamut of emotions. Of course, what'd she say? Exactly. And so a few things hit me as I reflected on that. One was I was not the center of the universe, which was a crushing blow to my ego. Number two, it's like, I made myself miserable for a year over something she didn't even remember. So one takeaway is a lot of the dumb things we do, people weren't even paying attention in the first place, nor do they remember. And then the other point that I'm thinking, so like, why make ourselves miserable? The other point is, like, now I think it's kind of funny. What about not making yourself miserable for months or years and then think it's funny? Why not see it with that perspective in the moment? So like, bring the zen that you get looking back into the moment. Mm-hmm. And so one of the techniques of doing that, and so I'm using an example, I'm using a story to illustrate how to make an idea hit home. So one of the simple techniques is to, whenever you're dealing, whether it's traffic or you say some, you know, make some faux pas in a social situation, is to say, is this going to be a big deal a year from now? And you think about it, I don't know about you, but for me, a lot of the things that I stress myself out about, they're not going to be a big deal later on in the day. Mm. Isn't that true? So it's like, why make myself miserable? Why pump toxic biochemicals, cortisol, etc., through my body when eventually I'm going to laugh at it? Okay? So that's an example of using a story when I'm teaching resilience. And those of you who are entrepreneurs, you know resilience is really important. Amen. Can I hear an amen? Yeah. And so realizing this too shall pass, this thing that seems like a disaster is going to be funny at some point, or if not funny, just like, whatever. And to bring it into the moment, telling a story. I mean, I have people from like 10 or 20 years ago come up to me like, oh, that Gamut story, you know, that people remember the stories more than they'll remember if you just do a simple statement. And here's the research to back it up. And this, actually, let me finish this piece and then do the research. So one of the things I want to ask you to do is to pay attention to things that happen in life that you're like, huh, that was kind of either funny, or I'm a big dummy, look at that, or wow, I could have sworn this, but this is true. Pay attention to those and think about, how can I use that as an analogy or a metaphor to make a point? Let me give you one other example, and then I'll tell you the research. Just recently, a friend and neighbor of mine took up surfing about a year ago, but we started surfing this year. And he's a newbie at it. But what was interesting is over these years, I've just surfed alone. I mean, there's been other guys out in the lineup, but not with a surf buddy. And it was interesting because he's like super Mr. Studious. So he's like all over YouTube watching the surfing videos and everything. And so we're out surfing, and he mentions how he was seeing this video where they were emphasizing how oftentimes surfers, when they're surfing, they'll put their arms out like this, and you don't get the hip movement to carve on the wave, and you really have to be conscious of having your arms out to the side. I'm like, yeah, right, okay, yeah, of course. But then he saw me surf, and he said, hey, oh, hey, how you doing? And he said, hey, you know, your arms are out front. They're not off to the side, one on each side. I'm like, okay, thanks for the heads up. And when I did that, my maneuverability, my ability to carve, it was game-changing. And when I thought about that, I thought, this is cool. What can this be a metaphor for? Actually, let me ask you this. In groups of threes or fours, what can that be a metaphor? How could you use that as a metaphor? Okay, so groups of threes or fours, we'll do 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'll come back together. Let's wrap up here. So, how could you use that as a teaching? How could somebody use that as a teaching story to make a point hit home? What'd you come up with? What are some of the points of that story? Yes.
Well, I think our group kind of came up with the, you know, you're kind of shifting your context a little bit. You know, just shifted your body a different way, shifting your mind a different way, and you come up with a different way of looking at something.
Fantastic. So just one small shift can be a game changer. Actually, I'm going to share, a story, a really super short story that speaks to that. How many of you know who Dan Kennedy is? Okay, amazing marketer, and he tells this story. This is an example of how one small shift can change your whole game. How he was—he had a gentleman come to his conference who was a former financial planner, didn't want to do financial planning anymore, but instead he wanted to sell information products to help financial planners grow their business. And it just wasn't happening for him. and he was now like $100,000 in credit card debt. He went to the conference and just had peanut butter and crackers. He couldn't afford the meals. And when he went up to Dan during one of the breaks, and he said, "You know, this is what I'm doing. It seems like it's awesome, but it's not working." And Dan said, "There was just one tweak to his thing, and it turned into a seven-figure business." And so sometimes, I love this saying, I heard it from a lady named Angelique Ruers, that your face is so close to the bark, you can't even see the tree, let alone the forest. Okay? So you might be one small tweak away from game-changing. What else did you come up with?
We came up with something that was like, it can apply to many different people.
Mm-hmm.
Just paying attention to life balance, and if you're leaning too far forward, you're going to fall on your face.
That's
stand up and take balance, you're going to go.
That's awesome. So that's a great example of taking an experience and have it like several degrees removed in terms of metaphor. So just really using the metaphor of balance and life balance. Very cool. What else? Yes?
Probably got to do with the ego. You know, when you hear that, you want to put up a defense. You get defensive. But then you actually do it. And you realize, well, this guy just told me something really simple. I tried it, and it worked for me. It might just be the snap at the end of your slap shot. You know what I mean?
Good.
But unless you actually go through with it, you don't see how effective it is.
Awesome point. And so you think about people that you deal with or have dealt with that are have pretty strong egos in terms of I'm right, everybody else isn't as smart as me, and that lack of coachability and lack of openness to feedback prevents them from growing. And so this is an example. So let's say I was telling this story to a client who that's their thing, okay, a big ego. I could use this story and maybe talk about thinking at first, like, who's this young pup trying to tell me how to surf? I mean, he's been surfing for a year, like watching YouTube videos. I've been surfing for years. I could let my ego keep me from listening, or I could keep my ego in check, listen, try it, and it's a game changer. And so I love that because you notice in this story, I'm making me out as kind of the big dummy. Do you know what I'm saying?
A little self-deprecation.
Self-deprecation, exactly. And that's a wonderful way of challenging people without acting like I'm superior than you. One of the things that's interesting to me, I won't name the name, some of you might guess the person, but there's a really famous person in the personal development and new age kind of thinking world. If you notice his stories, they're always about how superior he is to everybody else and how he's gently but wisely showing them the error of their ways. And that gets old after a while. Whereas if you share something in a self-deprecating way, then people can hear it and it can model that we don't have to try to be the smartest person in the room. We can admit our vulnerabilities. So paying attention to everyday life experiences, like how can that be a story? Actually, I'll share you one other and then we'll get to the research. A friend of mine, who's an awesome storyteller, said this to me the other day. I love this. She said, here's something interesting. She has an iPhone. She said, here's something interesting. She goes, and I'm sure you'll figure out a way to use this as a metaphor. That's the downside of being a friend of mine. And so she said, I don't know if you know this, but she had just tried to download the latest operating system for iPhones. And she said, a really high percentage of people cannot upgrade the operating system because they have too much stuff on their iPhone. There's no room for the new operating system. Yeah. And of course, I'm thinking, I'm all over that. I love this. So I'm going to just ask you to think later of all the cool ways you could use that as a metaphor. And actually, here's one other. It just hit me the other day. A lot of the work that I do in the workplace, in the corporate world, is helping people work through obstacles, problems, and achieve what they want through having productive conversations. And oftentimes I'm working with technical people who, you know, are technical wizards, but maybe not so much in the communication arena. And I had something happen a bunch of times recently with Outlook when I was trying to search emails and the indexing wasn't working. And so it's just searching and searching and searching, and I'm not finding the emails that I need. And just like you, you know, I've got a massive to-do list, deadlines, etc. And I'm like, come on here. I don't want this technology hassle getting in the way of me doing what I want to do. And I found myself thinking, man, that's the reverse of so many people in the technical field. Those pesky people are getting in the way of getting this technology working, whether it's the software developed, whether it's technical support, whatever it is. So that's another example of just something happened to me, and especially like your group, a great metaphorical leap is thinking, how is this a metaphor sort of in the reverse? Some stories and examples and metaphors are everywhere. So here's the resource I've been promising to share about why you want to share stories. Chip Heath of Chip and Dan Heath, who wrote the book, John Brubaker?
Made to Stick.
You got it. You must read Made to Stick. They've written several awesome books. You must read Made to Stick. And it's all about messages that are, quote, sticky, that make an impact and people remember. And two of the principles, two of the six principles of sticky messages, one is tell stories, two is use analogies. Okay? So Chip, of Chip and Dan Heath, is a professor at Stanford. And so here's an experiment he did. He did multiple times with his students. He would break them into groups of 6 to 8 students, and then he would have divide up the group. So we'll just make this simple. So like say Todd and Sue are together 8 students. Okay. So the Todd half of the group, they argue one side of an issue. The Sue half argue the opposite side. And then the people in the group would rate how compelling each argument was. And the students thought that was what the experiment was. Oh no, that was not what the real experiment was. Then what he did was he had them watch a 10-minute movie to kind of distract them, and then the real experiment kicked into gear. He asked them to recall the key points of each of those little mini 1-minute lectures. I can't remember if I mentioned the 1 minute. Okay, the 1 minute speeches. So 8 people in the group, how many minutes of speech did they hear?
8.
All right. Okay, so 8 minutes of speech. This is what happened. In the average 1 minute speech, the typical student used 2.5 statistics. Only one student in 10 would tell a story. They were using statistics. They were using facts. The remembering statistics, on the other hand, are almost a mirror image. When students are asked to recall the speeches, 63% remembered the stories and only 5% remembered any statistic. And what was interesting to me is a friend and colleague of mine emailed me an infographic that just said, people remember stories better than statistics, and then he cited the study. And that's a great takeaway, but isn't the story much cooler? And it just makes the idea hit home than just a takeaway. So it's a story about stories, and telling the story makes it more memorable. Okay? Now, so one of the things I want to ask you to do is not just to pay attention to like everyday life, like how could this be a cool metaphor to make a point that are, let me say it in a different way. When you think about what are some of the key points you make when you're talking with a prospect, when you're talking about your organization, etc., what are those key takeaway points? And then say, what's a story that makes that point hit home? So the outlook and the searching, that would be a great example of how people, a metaphor, the reverse of how people issues get in the way of technology, just like technology gets in the way of your productivity. So sharing stories that make that point clear. Also, remember I mentioned pain and promise stories? So the story that I shared about my early experience as a counselor and they didn't want to listen to me, that's a pain and promise story. So think about what are stories that I've heard from our clients, or let's say you're starting out in your business, people who are my ideal client, but I'm not working with them yet. What are stories of the pain that they're dealing with that I have a solution to? And what is an example of a promise? So in other words, here's what happens when you apply this solution. So back to my using stories with my clients. Remember me talking about once I started using stories, then they wanted to listen to me. So that's an example of a pain and promise story. I'll give you another example of a pain and promise story. And this is this was almost the one I started off the social media breakfast event with. But I decided to share a different story because I was really nervous, and the other story calms me down, the one that, that one from Australia that I shared. But the story I was about to start with, and this is an example of a pain and promise story. So the vendor was more of a pain story, you know, because it just wasn't happening for him. So here's a pain and promise. Years ago, I was speaking at a conference, and I was in the audience for the after-lunch plenary session. So there's up at the on the stage is an icon in the field. And he was very passionate about his topic. And he was dying on stage. Part of it, I think, was a post-lunch coma, you know, thing that was sinking in. But the problem was, is he was speaking in abstractions. So I'll give you an example in the business. This was in the mind body medicine field, but like the business field, like you must listen to your prospects. You must understand where they're coming from. And you're like, yeah, I know that. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he was doing that. And it was interesting because at this point, I wasn't really using or teaching stories in presentational skills. I was teaching it for coaching and clinical reasons or applications. But as he's doing his, like, admonishing the audience, I find myself, like, slipping into a coma. And just before I lose consciousness, I sort of look around, and the whole audience, the energy was just, you know, all the life was getting sucked out of the room. And I don't know if it was, like, plan B. You notice he had to do something different, or this was just part of his, what he had planned for the next part of his talk, but he started to share a case study. He started to share a story that everybody in the audience could relate to. And it was weird. It's like, I felt like I rose from the dead. I'm like this. And I look around, and like everybody else, like, oh, cool, because he was connecting at the visceral level. So that's an example. So I shared that story second at the social media breakfast. So that's an example of starting off with a story that's a pain that the people in the audience can relate to, and it's also the promise. Like, if you use this, here's the good stuff that'll happen. Okay? Now, actually, before I share with you another reason to tell stories, any questions about anything we've talked about so far? Going once, going twice. So.
Is the promise like testimonials that you've gotten from clients?
No. Whatever? Okay, so thanks for asking. Look, I want to be super clear. So the promise is the vision. It's like the after picture. So like in infomercials where you have the guy who's like this with the pants on, like I've lost this much weight, or the when I do programs on constructive conversations, I oftentimes start off the program with a really difficult conversation that I had with a coworker, and what I did to make the conversation work. And so the promise is the after picture, what life will look like for them related to the problem if they listen to and apply your solution. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions, like for clarification or anything? Here's another example of why you want to tell stories. Some of you know the term about the know, like, trust factor in doing business, is that people need to know, like, and trust you. And in today's world where cynicism and skepticism is at, you know, all-time highs, where there's so much noise in the marketplace and so many options, how are you going to differentiate? How are you going to, like, get above all the background noise? How do you get people to care about your message versus all the other messages? And stories are a way to do that. And let me give you an example from a rather improbable source, at least for me. And it's how a story turned me into a fan of fun. Not the experience of fun. I like fun. But the band Fun. How many of you know that band? Okay. Not a genre that I listen to.
What is it? What's the genre?
It's like pop, like sort of bubblegum rock. But here's what happened. What turned me into a fan. Punched the memory button on the radio going through the stations, and I hit public radio, and there's this interview. And it's an interview with Nate Roos, who's their front man. And here's what he talked, here's what he shares. And as I'm sharing this, I know some of you in here will especially resonate with this, and that's why I'm especially telling this story for you. And he was talking about, he was 31 at the time, that he was actually a wunderkind, a musician. At 19, he got a record contract. Super. Next 10 years, languished. Nothing happening in his business. And he's wondering, is it ever going to pan out? And you know that feeling, it's just like you're pumping the pump, and nothing's happening. And he also shared how he had, a while back, to add to his self-doubts, he had broken up with yet another band. And he said, I was wondering, do I have some sort of psychological flaw that is keeping me from being able to be part of a band? And you know how we have that experience where things happen and we end up making it so much about ourselves and, like, what's wrong with me? And so he was really locked into that place. Well, as that's going on, he actually did start another band. And he's driving down the freeway. And suddenly, this chorus appears. He starts hearing this chorus. And it's not from the radio. It's inside his head. And he goes on to explain that he can't write music. He doesn't play an instrument. He just basically hears music. It comes to him. And at first he thought, oh, that'll be kind of a cool little ditty at the end of a song for this album. Nice little catchy chorus. But the chorus would not go away. And in some ways, it's like that still small voice inside of you that's asking you to maybe step up to the next level or take that risk. For him, though, it was just this persistent chorus. And so he talks a little more in the interview that he reaches out to a man named Jeff Basker, who's a big-time producer. He had produced a couple of Kanye West albums. Jeff was in the middle of producing a Beyonce album. And Nate says how he reached out to him. He said, this guy's like way out of our league, but he made the effort anyway, got blown off twice. I don't know if he got no-showed or what. That's my sense of it. But three times the charm. So he meets Jeff Basker at the bar in the Bowery Hotel in New York City. And it's really charming. Actually, let me send this around to you. I will send you the link to the interview. I highly recommend the interview. Also, I've got a worksheet for you for how to tell your origin story, your pain and promise story, and a couple of other to build on this. So,
do you want to put our cards in?
Yeah, just put your cards in. And actually, I'm going to raffle off.
There's nothing in there. I just thought it was my birthday.
And also, two things I'm going to also going to pick two lucky winners. This is something that I did for the American Society for Training and Development called Powerful Storytelling Techniques. If you want a copy, on sale now, for $20 or regular $25, so they're over there, just stop me at the end, but I'll pick one lucky winner. The other thing that we'll pick out of here is a awesome example of how to use a story to communicate a compelling message. And this is from friend and colleague John Brubaker back here, called Seeds of Success. And just a quick little FYI, I personally despise those little parables that are so popular in the business world. I won't name names just in case you like some of them. I despise them. And I only read this because I like and respect John. And like, dang, this is like many levels above the typical type of business parable. The story itself, even without the message, is a fun read. It's not like you have to keep from gagging as you read the story to get the takeaway message, just like a lot of business people. So one lucky person will get to read this. Let me go back to, why was that? Oh, that's right, the Nate Russo interview. Pull me back in. So here's what he's at the, we'll reestablish the scene. So he's in the basement of the Bowery Hotel, at the bar's in the basement, and he's so cute because he said, the interviewer said, I read that you got there early and had a few drinks. And he said, yeah. He goes, I was kind of lubed up. it was good, though, because it kept me from being, in his words, my typical self-demeaning self. And so with the benefit of a couple adult beverages, instead of being like all in awe of this big player in the music industry, he's like, yeah, this is cool, and talking back and forth. And so Jeff's like, hey, I just finished up my Beyonce demo. Do you want to come up and listen to it? Because I guess he's staying at the Bowery Hotel. So he's like, cool. So he goes up there, listens to the demo, and then this is where it gets awesome. And it's like when you have the chance to step up and really step into your power and not think that you're small. Because I love this. And again, this was like alcohol facilitated. But Jeff is like, the interview goes, and then I read that you proceeded to sing this chorus a cappella. And Nate's like, yeah. So he was so in the zone and filled and with somebody who digs music just like he does, and so filled with a passion for what he was doing in his art that he just let it rip. And I want to play the produced version. All the instruments and everything weren't in the hotel room. But this is what he sang. So just picture him just belting it out. So after hearing that story and hearing him share in such a genuine, open, not too cool for school kind of way, you know, it's like that, you had me at hello. He had me at that interview. And so when you share stories about things that are meaningful to you, about why you care about your business, about challenges that you've had in getting it started or reaching the level that you want to reach, you resonate with your audience. And so here's what I want to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to be thinking about, and then I'm going to ask you to share with somebody new, a simple example of when you stepped outside your comfort zone, like Nate did, and talked to, oh, minor part of the story. By the way, Jeff said, I want to produce your album.
Mm-hmm. That's always good.
And the rest is history. Dominated the charts for I don't know how long. So when you stepped up and were willing to be brave and it made a difference, so you can either think about that, or if you're like, oh my God, I can't think about that right now, here's another story that you can share with your partner. A short story about how you didn't think you could do something, but you did. And I'll give you an example to prime the pump. Oh, by the way, if you're wanting people to come up with examples, share a short story from your own experience to get the unconscious mind working, as well as the conscious mind. So a quick example. Several years ago, I did I spoke at a fundraising benefit for this organization. And I approached the executive director to bring a couple of other speakers together, and we would do this fundraiser. And she said, that's awesome. Would you be the MC? And my first response in my head was like, no. Because even though I've done a lot of speaking over the years in front of big groups, I'm an introvert. I'm not like, hey, how you doing? You know, kind of MC, how I think of typical MCs or schmoozer kind of person. So I'm like, that's just not something I can do. So I've always avoided that sort of role. But I figured, you know, you're the one who suggested this event. You know, step up and be, you know, be a leader for what you're trying to make happen here. Don't shy away from this opportunity. And so I'm like, okay, sure. So one of the aspects of my talk, that's why I still was there. That's right. One of the messages of my talk was overcoming limiting beliefs. And when it was over, I was talking with a friend about the day and how it was awesome. It was a really awesome group, receptive group. Had a great time doing my talk. Had a wonderful time doing the MC. And when it was over, I said to my friend, oh my God, it just dawned on me. Remember that thing I said about self-limiting beliefs? Mm-hmm. I just realized all these years I had been telling myself I don't have what it takes to be an MC. And not only did a lot of people say, oh, you did a great job, but also it was fun. And what I asked myself, I want to ask you, is I found myself thinking, if I thought I couldn't do this, but I could, it's also pretty darn easy, what else do I think I can't do? And I really could. It would really be pretty darn easy. So that's an example of a I didn't think I could, but I did story. So here's what I want to ask you to do. And if you could be really good with the time, because I want to make sure we end on time, say 5 to 6 minutes with a partner. You could stand up if you want to, you know, get some exercise, to share an example of a time where you didn't think you could do something and you did. Either it was like, wow, that was easy, or it was hard, but you did do it. Or a time like Nate Roos, where you're scared like to meet somebody or to do something that's outside your comfort zone, you did it, and it brought your business to a whole different, or life to a whole different level. Okay? So if you could please pick a partner, we'll do 5 or 6 minutes. I'll give you a 1 minute warning to wrap up. So, let's get back together. So, if your story is part of your business story, that's part of your origin story. And so in that handout, I'll give you a bunch of questions that if I were working with you one-on-one on creating your origin story, these are questions I'd be asking you. So, we're going to do the raffle, and I'm going to end off with a answer any questions, then end off with a final story. But before we do, Liz from Peloton Labs.
Hi, Yeah, I just want to tell people that tonight there's a storytelling for entrepreneurs event at Peloton, and I think there's only about 7 tickets left, but you could Google it at Peloton Speaks on Eventbrite. But what we're doing, and we're hoping to be doing this regularly in the future, is having an event where we have pizza and beer sponsors, and then we're going to have 8 storytelling slots, so kind of in a story slam style. So we have 4 speakers picked out for this time, but then 4 of the slots will be picked out of a hat by attendees.
You had me at pizza and beer.
It's called Peloton Speaks, and it's on Eventbrite. Thanks.
So cool. Thank you. All right, so we'll see who... Liz Trice, there you go.
See, it's a success.
And actually, one other thing I wanted to mention, using storytelling, it isn't just to make your presentations more interesting, your points more memorable when you're speaking, whether it's in front of a group or one-on-one. It isn't just as a wonderful tool for challenging people without being in your face. It's also a wonderful medium to use when you're writing, is using a story. In fact, one of my favorite, back to John, did a great article at entrepreneur.com. The title was, what's the model on what I learned? So go ahead, Sarah.
Go ahead.
What I learned from dating a model, was that the title? And it's, I mean, how could you not read that? And it was a perfect, perfect example of how to start off an article. Bam! Attracting somebody's attention, using the story to make the point memorable. And actually, speaking of that, one of the things that I'll be doing when I send you the handout, I'll send you a link to my storytelling website, which has a whole bunch of blog posts about examples of using stories, including some analysis of stories that interviewees on Entrepreneur on Fire have told. So if you're an entrepreneur, I highly recommend Entrepreneur on Fire from John Lee Dumas, who used to be from Maine, now is in San Diego. And it's a really, the podcast in general is fantastic, but it's also, it's like storytelling you, because he coaches people ahead of time to use stories to make their point. And when they do the interview, if they're not using stories, he's all over them. And I have a couple of examples where people drop the ball and they're just talking at 30,000 foot, you know, using abstract terms, truisms, platitudes, takeaway messages. But no, here's what happened. So using stories is great in your writing. So then for powerful storytelling, oh, Rebecca.
Oh, yay.
There you go, man.
Thank you.
You are welcome. So again, I'll be over there at the end for those of you who want those. Cool. So here's the close. Oh, actually, Q&A. Any cues? And I'll hopefully have an A. Yeah.
I was wondering if you have any tips on using storytelling and writing for the web, or, you know, trying to get it quick, because, like, if you're writing something for the web, you got to get people really quickly. Oh. You can't tell a long story.
You got it.
But you want to engage them.
Like blogging?
Not blogging, but even, like, so I'm a web developer, I'm developing my website, I'm trying to get freelance work, whatever, and I want to tell a story to get people engaged in what I can offer.
So do a short pain and promise story. So if you go to my Stories That Change website, you'll see that in spades. Go to Entrepreneur and Google John Brubaker, and almost every article starts with a short story. You got it. And also, here's actually, since you brought that up, one other thing that oftentimes I get with people is like, you know, I work with, you know, if I'm trying to explain it to the people that I deal with, that shoot me because they're impatient. They don't want to hear some long-winded story. And storytelling isn't being like Garrison Keillor, like blah, blah, blah. You can tell short and sweet. You can also just give an example. So so you could say, let's say, let me give you an example of giving an example. Okay, I'll give you here's an example. So let's say you're coaching people to Okay, there we go. God, my brain went. Okay, here we go. You're coaching people, your sales force, to really listen to the prospect. And so, for instance, I remember hearing some now world famous consultant who teaches professionals to have good client relationships talk about his major blooper as a newbie in a firm. They go to this potential big time account. The people said, okay, you know, tell me about yourself. He ends up going on for half an hour without taking a breath. And then he finally stops and the guy goes, okay, thank you very much for coming in. And that was that. So that's like 1 minute story of like, yikes, you know, don't be blathering on. So you could just do it like a for instance. For example. Yes?
Something that kind of speaks to that, and I just made me think of examples, but like when you're scrolling on Facebook on your phone, and all of a sudden you see what attracts your attention, like, you know, here's what happened when the guy went into this cave.
Yes.
You know, and it shows this amazing artwork that he spent 30 years on, and he does it all in. So then you're sucked into that story when they put a little photo and says, you know, see what happens next. You know, and you see someone that's about to do something, and you're like, I guess so. And you just keep going, like, you know, like 30 minutes into like 50 seconds. So that's, I think that's the biggest.
You got it.
Whatever you can, however you can clean it from these things, what catches what you attach to, but how you can use your business model in a quick, like, Facebook. You know, that's as fast as you can get. Someone scrolling and stop on a photo, like, oop, you know, or something, what happens next?
You got it.
Might be a
great metaphor as well as practical recommendation. Any other questions? Okay. So here's a story that, while you were doing your exercise, popped into my mind that would be a nice story to end off, because it speaks at two different levels. And if you've been noticing, and actually I'm going to post this on my website, and you could, the recording of it, and you can listen to it. And I want, and if you listen to it, I encourage you to notice how it happens and notice different language patterns that are designed to help people connect my story with their story. Okay? And so part of whenever I'm using stories, I love Chip and Dan Heath, they talk about stories provide both inspiration and simulation. So they inspire what's possible, people to think about what's possible. They also are sort of like these virtual reality experiences that allow people to experience what's possible. So whether it's engaging clients in a new, more productive way, whether it's speaking up to their boss, whether it's being brave, etc. Stories provide inspiration and simulation. And so this final story, it came to me that might be a nice way to end off. So it's both an example of, if you have the storyteller attitude as you go through life, you can have simple everyday experiences and turn them into really powerful messages. It's like, I think it was Keats said, poetry makes all of life interesting. And I think storytelling makes all of life interesting. And so here's what happened. And so many, many moons ago, I worked for a seminar company, and I would go around the country doing seminars. And it was a really tough gig. Nothing glamorous about it. Land in one city, do my thing, drive to another city, stay at some like budget hotel, do my thing, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm not a super organized guy, but I was really proud of myself that I became super organized with my traveling setup. That I put, this is back in the day where they're like three-piece suits. I had my three-piece suit, navy blue three-piece suit, you know, white shirt, tie, blah, blah, blah. All my gear in my travel, my, you know, those garment bags. And then I get to the, and I'm very proud, I'm organized. I get to the hotel room, I open up the travel bag, oops. It wasn't my navy blue suit, it was just my navy blue jacket, nothing else. And this is back in the day, and I was doing some work with Kodak. So super buttoned up, you know, Fortune 500. You don't go in looking like, you know, you're from Silicon Valley. So, man. So there's no way I was going to buy a whole new suit for this one gig, but I had to get a tie, obviously. And I did have a shirt. But I was going to do my you know, regular pants and my navy blue and get a tie. So I just wanted to, like, veg out at the hotel, traveled all day, you know, got to go to the mall. So I drive to the mall. You know how we do this when Hassel's like, nah, 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 nah. You know, just, oh, what a drag. I wish I were back in the hotel, chilling, blah, blah, blah. And so we get lost in our little drama. So I get to the mall, and there's only like 20 minutes left before it closes. So I run to the, and it's a pretty small mall, I run to the department store, and I go to the men's section. Some of you can relate to this. There's only like 5% of any clothing item that I ever like, and none of their ties could I stomach. Okay. So I run to the last one, and, you know, time's ticking. We're almost out of time, and I'm like, okay, that one I can stomach, that tie. But here's the problem. You know how, like in department stores, they have things under glass? And so the tie's behind glass, and there's no clerks. And so it's like one of those things. So here's an example of one of those language patterns I talked about before. So it's one of those situations where what you want feels so close, so close, but it's not happening. And I'm like, come on, and like, where's the clerk? And so I'm just stuck feeling ticked off. I need help to get my dang tie so I can get back to the motel, go to sleep, you know, rah, 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 rah. And then finally, this lady comes out from behind, and she's like, hi, can I help you? I'm like, yeah. I didn't say that word, but that's what I'm thinking. And she comes over, and I say, yes, I want that tie, but I can't get it because it's behind the glass. And she goes, oh, actually, it's not. I know it's sort of like an optical illusion the way the glass is. She just reaches in. And so I just want to leave that with you to think about what might be your tie behind the glass. Thank you very much.